Okay, so good morning. For the next 6 weeks, I'm going to be talking to you about Britain since the Romans. Now, I need you to be silent or it's not going to be possible. So, I'm going to go from the Romans to today in only 6 hours. So, this is accelerated history. Yeah, very, very rapidly. And today we're going to start then with Roman Britain. And let me tell you a little bit about the course itself. You can see on the board here the description of the course that you have already read because it is in your livret. Ce cours vise à introduire l'histoire et la civilisation de la Grande-Bretagne. Nous commencerons notre fresque par l'histoire et l'analyse de l'occupation romaine. Ensuite, les invasions saxonnes et vikings. Nous mènerons au Moyen Âge. Je ne peux travailler qu'en silence avec une salle de cette taille. Ah, je savais que ma formation de maître en maternelle me servirait à quelque chose. Dans une deuxième partie, nous verrons les crises du féodalisme et la conquête de l'Angleterre par la religion protestante lors de la Réforme. Une grande différence entre l'Angleterre et la France est que c'est un pays protestant. Et enfin, on se demandera pourquoi l'Angleterre a pu construire un empire mondial et être le premier pays à s'industrialiser profondément. Et enfin, le XXe siècle. So, I'm going to speak in English. I will try to speak slowly, but I am recording it, so if you find it a little difficult, you will be able to listen to it again on my blog later. So here we have Britain. It's not very big. Of course, today it is politically divided into England, Wales, Scotland for Great Britain. And there are a couple of things about the geography which are important. That's somebody who's forgotten to switch off the microphone. In fact, that's a microphone, that is, definitely. Yeah. The most important geographical fact which influences the history is the mountains. They're not very big mountains, but in Wales and in Scotland, quite a lot of mountains. And this will make a difference for the Romans because they will have great difficulty invading Wales and Scotland. So if we start our story a long time ago, before the Romans, then we can see that some of the oldest civilizations in the British Isles have left their mark on the landscape. This is, of course, Stonehenge. Please sit. This is, of course, Stonehenge, which was built a number of thousands of years ago. 6,000 years ago. About 6,000 years ago. And this is a very interesting monument. Of course, it's very pretty. But also, we know now quite a lot about this monument. For example, these stones, they came from a long distance away. We know where they came from. That is to say that they managed to develop the technology necessary to move these stones 200 kilometers. So probably quite a sophisticated society which could do this. We don't know exactly why they raised these stones, probably for some religious or magical reason. There you have a close-up of some of the stones. But the work is still being done. They're still working very hard to understand Stonehenge. We don't have a lot of information. But fortunately, it exists. After this civilization, another civilization which was very important is about 2,000 years before Christ, that is to say about 4,000 years ago, a new group of people came from the Rhine, from where Germany is today, and came to live in Britain, and we often call them the Beaker civilization. The reason we call them the beaker civilization is that this is it's a beaker, and that's it's a kind of pottery which is typical of this civilization. So this is about 4,000 years ago. About 3,000 years ago arrive a civilization which will have a lot more influence on the history of Britain, the Celts. The Celts arrive in Britain about 700 years before Christ. They are much more technological. They have axes which are made of iron. Now, if you're going to make an axe, it's much better to make an axe with iron than with stone. So this is relatively sophisticated, and this allows them to eliminate a lot of forests and to establish agriculture. And agriculture is a very important revolution in human history because you need a lot of science to establish agriculture, because you need to understand what a seed is, how it works. What do you do with the seed? Do you put it in the ground in March or in December? Or I don't know. But they had to find these things out. The Celts still leave their mark today, because there are still today some Celtic languages spoken in Britain. In Wales, they speak Welsh. Yeah, the only thing I know how to say in Welsh is "Mae'r tost yn barod," which is "My toast is ready." Could be useful. In Scotland, there are also people who speak a Celtic language, and in Ireland. So those languages still exist today. And that was the situation. This is also Celtic. This is Celtic hunting horns. Yeah. Drinking. It's for drinking. It's for drinking from Celtic. This is in the British Library, the British Museum in London. These are horns for drinking from. And here you have some Celtic helmets. Yeah, so you can see that they could make some relatively sophisticated stuff. So when the Romans begin to worry about Britain, this is the situation of Britain. 50 years before Jesus Christ, the Roman Empire is very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. The biggest empire in the history of the world until the British Empire later on. And this is Britain in 50 BC. You don't need to know all the names of these tribes, but you can see many different peoples. Yeah, it's not an organized country, many different peoples, and sometimes they are working together and sometimes they are fighting against each other, as these things tend to do. And the Romans decided to invade Britain, and the first two attempts to invade Britain were not successful. Julius Caesar — this is not a real photograph of Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar in 55 BC was not successful. He arrived in Britain and was not successful in invading. The second was a little more successful, eventually not so. Third attempt, the Romans were successful, and by 50 years after Jesus Christ, you have this situation in Britain. An important section of Britain is directly under Roman control. So what did the Romans do when they came to Britain? Now, of course, the Roman Empire was an important event and changed history considerably. If you speak French, it's because of the Roman Empire. Yeah? The French is Latin. C'est du latin mal parlé, au fond. It's the Roman Empire which imposed all this. So what did they do? Well, like most big changes in history, it was contradictory. On the one hand, the Romans built very good roads. There were no good roads at all. They built good roads. They built aqueducts to provide water to the towns. They produce theatres and culture for the towns and sewage systems, les égouts, vous savez probablement pas vécu dans des villes sans égouts, je ne le recommande pas. Very, very important advances. On the other hand, most of the advances did not benefit the ordinary people. And also, the Roman culture was tremendously violent. Unbelievably cruel. Of course, slavery was the lot of many ordinary people. And if you were a slave, of course, you could be killed by your owners. And famously, the most famous element of this, of course, is the gladiators. This is not a real gladiator. These seem very bizarre to our eyes today, but if you were a rich Roman citizen, then you would organize a festival, and on the card you said, please come to my party, 50 slaves will die. Yeah? Last year, your friend invited you to a party where it said 30 slaves will die. 30 slaves. It's nothing. 50 slaves will die. This was really the atmosphere of the elite. So it's a tremendously cruel and violent society, at the same time as being technologically very advanced. The games were very spectacular. We know about the gladiators and the lions, but they also had, you know, like elephants against lions. It sounds fun, doesn't it? Elephants against lions, I think. No? Oh, you love animals. Yeah, okay. Okay, but I thought that'd be quite fun. Seals against lions. Des phoques contre les lions. Yeah? No, they had a lot of imagination. But yeah, so very cruel and violent. Now, the speciality of the Romans is that the Romans were really not racist. Really not racist. When the Romans arrived in a country, oh, here's a new, I'm the Roman, I've just arrived, I'm invading your country. You are the elites. I will give you many privileges. You have complete rights as Roman Roman citizens. You will have all the benefits of the town and the culture and so on. You can have a job with the Roman government. You're slaves, sorry. You're just all slaves, okay? So you can kill them and things like that. Okay, I think it's important to remember that today we think of the town as the center of production, the center of the economy. In the Roman times, this was not the case. All of the riches, all of the useful work was done in the countryside. And the towns were for the elite to profit from the countryside. So a very different situation. The Roman system of building the empire was quite simple. You occupy a new country. You allow the elite to join the Roman Empire, to be full Roman citizens. It doesn't matter if they're white, black, English. It doesn't matter. You get taxes from the agriculture. Quite high taxes, yeah? So for the ordinary farmers, it's not so much fun. And the taxes allow the Romans to pay for a big army to control the empire. And that is the reason why some sections of Britain could not be invaded. Look, the Romans didn't come here. Look, the Romans didn't come there. Why not? Very, very simple reason. In the mountains, there is not enough agriculture to produce enough taxes to pay the army. It's a very, very simple idea. This is the same reason that the Roman Empire stops at the north of Africa. They don't go any further down because there's not enough, at this time, enough agriculture to pay the taxes. In Germany, the big, terrible forests, the Germans don't go any further, because there's not enough agriculture to pay the taxes. There you have the Circus Maximus in Rome. This is where they had the gladiators and the chariot races and so on. But there were also these games also in Britain. Yeah, when they invaded a country, they established the Roman culture. So you had gladiators in England as well, and being thrown to the lions. And oh, it's great fun. 50 slaves will die. Yeah, it was better than Grand Theft Auto, and there you go. They are dying, and of course this is the traditional thing. Now, of course, the slaves were not stupid, And every now and then you had a slave revolt. The most famous slave revolt is Spartacus, who was really pretty impressive. He organized an army of slaves, of 30,000 slaves. And he defeated the Roman army and was successful for a year or two. Of course, when the slave revolts were defeated, the punishment was terrible. Yeah. At the end of the slave revolt with Spartacus, there were 6,000 slaves left, 6,000 survivors, and they were crucified along 6,000 in a row along a long road. So for 100 kilometers you had dead people, because the elite were terrified of slave revolts, so it was very important to terrify everybody after. And this is a general history of slave revolts around the world. The repression is terrible, absolutely terrible, because that's how it works. So you have this contradictory society. So what about Britain then? Well, Britain was important because Britain was the last big victory of the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, they occupied, of course, France and parts of what is today Germany, the whole of Italy, parts of Greece, etc. But the last big present left, the last big victory was Britain. In AD 41, on 41 de notre ère, the Roman Empire is assassinated, and there are two possible new Roman emperors. And when one of them becomes Emperor Claudius, he needed to have a war. If you wanted to be prestigious in Rome at this time, a military victory was essential. And so he decided Britain will be our victory. So 40,000 Roman soldiers invaded Britain, and they are victorious. So, notez bien, 40,000 soldats romains envahissent l'Angleterre. It's not a lot, really. It's not like, you know, it's not like later invasions, which are much more important. They increased the trade. This is just an example of Roman trade. These are for carrying fruits or olive oil or wine, etc. These are amphorae. And they worked very hard at increasing the economy of Britain. They also worked very hard at the local elites. I'm the Roman, you're the local elite. I want to make you into Romans. So, for example, I don't want you to carry swords all day, because the Celtic tribes, the important people, they carried axes or swords, they carried weapons all the time. And so the Roman Empire says, no, we don't do that. No weapons in public. We're going to have debates and forums and theatre and music. We're going to be civilised. Yeah. Of course, we don't care about the slaves, but we'll be civilised among ourselves. They also built country houses, villas. This is a model of a Roman villa. And they're very important places where there is space for the slaves and for the kitchens and for the hunters and so on. Life is really pretty complicated because even to eat, if you have an army of 1,000 people or 2,000 people, it's very complicated at this time to organize the food. Yeah, the hunting, the fishing, the agriculture, and so on. One of the things which the rich Roman elite liked very much was the mosaic. This was a tremendous prestige, the mosaic, because it has to be made, each individual section has to be made in a special way. So the quality of the mosaics tells us about how rich the people were at the time. Now, there was some opposition. When the Romans wanted to invade Britain, they found some opposition. I already explained, they tried to take Scotland, but but the Scottish were too strong. They tried to take Wales, and they were not really successful. They had to keep going in and out. So there was a lot of fighting. And there was one bigger rebellion in 61, on 61 de notre ère. There was a big rebellion of the British against the Romans. And one of the significant things about it is that the leader was a woman. Yeah, the leader was a woman. We usually call her, on a different manière de l'écrire, Boudicea. We sometimes say Boudica, it's the same thing. This was an important revolt. She was not successful, but it was a very strong revolt. And it's very interesting because we have a lot of information about it. Because the Roman writers, they wrote the story of Boudicea. And how impressive she was in opposing them. And they also talk about the religion of the British before the Romans, the religion of the British, which was the Druids, was the magical and religious tradition of the time, the Druids. You can see that the war was continual. In any case, the Roman Empire was never at peace. They continued to fight here, here, and here for decades and decades. And in Scotland, they advance and then they retreat, and they advance and then they retreat. And indeed, once in the 80s, the Romans got the furthest north, but over the next 30 years, they retreated gradually. And in 110, approximately, 117, the new Roman Emperor Hadrian, was faced with a crisis in the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire could only survive if it continued to expand. But it was blocked in Germany, it was blocked in Scotland, and so Hadrian had a new idea. He said, we're going to be more defensive. So don't attack Scotland anymore. And they built an enormous wall to divide Scotland from Roman England, and the wall is called Hadrian's Wall now, and it's, you can still see the wall today. You can go to the wall, and that is it. Now, of course, it would be more impressive at the time with towers and people preparing to attack and so on. But you can still see the wall, Hadrian's Wall, and it lasted for it stayed there for quite a long time. But it was abandoned in 150. And here you have the new situation: direct Roman control under Roman influence. So for 100 years, for 200 years, the British problem was never completely solved. It was kind of solved, but 200 years, yeah, it's not so bad. The Roman Emperor Severus came to Britain in 208 and said, this time we are definitely going to win. So they attacked Scotland again, and they used a new method. They went into Scotland and they killed every man they found and every pregnant woman they found. So, you know, it's a convincing sort of tactic. But again, this was not sufficient. They never tried again. And in fact, Scotland was never won. Now, the economy was going somewhat better. The Roman government organized gold mines in the south of Wales, the Mina d'Or. In the south of Wales, and also around here, lead mines, the Mina de Plomb. Ce sont des éléments très, 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 très importants. The army was enormous, 40,000 men in the Roman Empire at this time, and there were at least 1,000. You saw the villa. There were at least 1,000 country villas. Let's have a look now then at the crisis in the 3rd century. There was an enormous crisis in the 3rd century because, first of all, politically in Rome, things got more complicated. After 180 de notre ère, there were a series of coup d'état in Rome. The Roman elite was completely divided. One of the Roman emperors, Caracalla, he killed his brother to become emperor and then was killed by a friend of his brother. You can see the sort of situation, a tremendous political crisis. On the Rhine, in the place which is now Germany, the Roman army murdered the emperor when he went to visit the army. He was murdered. The next emperor was murdered by his own soldiers. And in fact, over a period of 50 years, there were 40 different emperors. So in a period of 50 ans, il y avait 40 empereurs différents. Ça s'appelle une crise politique. Because normally an emperor is emperor until he dies. Well, they were emperor until they died. They just died very quickly. Now, why is this important for Britain? Well, at this time, 10% of the Roman army is in Britain. So it's an important section of the Roman Empire, 10% of the Roman army. And they continue sending, one of their important roles is to send taxes back to Rome, send money back to Rome, get profit for Rome, and also stabilize the local elites. Britain was organized in this time in two sections, Britannia Superior with the capital in London, and Britannia Inferior with the capital in York. This was the idea that it would be more stable if you had this. But this is also the moment we're talking about 250, 280, 250 de notre ère, à peu près. But they also have some problems because they are being attacked now for the first time by new invaders, the Anglo-Saxons. These are just small attacks for the moment, but they are attacked. It's interesting because the way that we know, how do we know all this? Because there were no people, nobody was writing it down. One of the ways is that the Roman towns around here, they build new fortifications near the sea at this period. So we know that they were attacked by the sea. And the next big event here is in 286. You have a major rebellion in 286 AD. You know, in English we say AD for de notre ère and BC for avant Jésus-Christ. Yes, and 286 is the revolt of Carausius. And Carausius was a Roman soldier in Britain, an important Roman soldier in Britain, and he said, well, Rome is in a terrible crisis. 40 emperors in 50 years, it's a terrible crisis, so I am going to declare myself Emperor of Britain. And so he declared himself Emperor of Britain. Ce qui est assez culotté, c'est qu'il déclare qu'il est co-empereur. Il dit, l'empereur m'a dit de devenir co-empereur, puisque les gens, ils n'avaient pas Internet pour vérifier. He became co-emperor of Britain, and this survived for some time, the revolt of Carausius. Now, this was not a new idea. Other sections of the empire in other parts of Europe were also rebelling. Yeah. But he became emperor, and here you have some coins of the emperor Carausius, when he rebelled against Rome. You can see Imperator, Empereur, Carausius, yeah? And here you have the other side of it. Now, the coins are very, very useful because we can get a lot of information from them. And for example, well, first of all, if he produced coins, he was an organized government. But secondly, if you analyze these coins, the quality of the gold is good quality. So this means a certain political stability. Yeah, in fact, the coins were better than the official Roman coins, because he had more power locally. So very often, historians have a terrible problem, because you cannot phone Julius Caesar to ask him for the truth. So we're always trying to find information in unusual places. For example, the quality of the coin will give us a lot of information there. C'est pas de l'or, c'est de l'argent, pardon. Now, of course, there's another one. Silence. Thank you. Okay. Now, of course, the Roman Empire could not accept this situation with a rebel emperor. You see, Carausius hoped that the Roman Empire was too weak to counterattack. But in fact, they weren't. And 10 years after the revolt of Carausius, the Roman emperor arrived with an army, and Carausius they dealt with Carausius in the normal way. So you have the crisis of the Roman Empire continues. And the first idea under Hadrian was, let's not expand anymore. That was not really successful. The second idea was different sections of the empire were rebelling. Not a great feature in that. And the third idea, here is the third idea. The emperor Constantine had a new idea to save the Roman Empire. A very original idea to save the Roman Empire. He understood it was in crisis. And what he did, remember, this is now 306. The arrival of the new Emperor Constantine. This is a statue of Constantine in Britain, in York. And what was his new idea? Well, there was another important force in history at this time, and this was the Christian religion. The Christian religion, for a long time, was very small, but it was very powerful. It grew and grew, more and more influence. And of course, in France, you had the Christian martyrs. The Romans executed Christians in France and elsewhere, of course. And for a long time, if you were a Christian in the Roman Empire, it was dangerous. Yeah, you could. I've organized a visit for you to see the lions very close up. Yeah, so you got executed. And si vous allez être exécuté, être bouffé vivant par des lions, c'est nul. Hein? Vraiment, je ne recommande pas. Okay, so. Constantine had a completely new idea. He said, let's make Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire. So for hundreds of years, the Roman Empire had attacked the Christians, this little rather unusual religion. It's a slightly bizarre story, really. Now, new idea, let's make it the official religion. Now, why? Well, first of all, the Christian religion had a very powerful idea, the Jewish and Christian idea together, only one God. Now, the Celts had, we have seven gods or eight sometimes. The Romans, we have lots of gods, you know the Roman gods Venus and Mercury and lots of gods. And this new idea coming onto the scene, only one God, this is a very powerful idea. It means that it's not so complicated to understand the world. There's only one God. Yeah? So the world is coherent. In the Romans, you have this God is fighting against this God, and this God wants this, and this God... Oh, yeah? So it had a certain advantage. There was a second big advantage. Most of the people who could read and write were Christians. Yeah? Because Christianity is a religion of the book... the Christians and the Jews, but there were not enough Jews at the time. But the Christians could read and write. And so the emperor said, if we integrate the church into the Roman Empire, we will have a lot of people who can read and write, which is very, very important. If you're organizing an army, you need people who can read and write. It's very, very important. Accounts, calculations and so on, education. And so that's what they did. In 313, Christianity was officially legalized. The Roman Empire imposed Christianity. They said this church, this temple, which is a pagan temple, the Temple Païen, they were destroyed and they were replaced by Christian churches. A lot of money was given to the church. Of course, people believed in the religion, but it was also had a very practical purpose as well. Je ne suis pas en train de dire qu'il n'était pas vraiment, il croyait pas vraiment dans l'évangile, c'est pas le problème. Mais ça avait une utilité pratique pour l'empire. So this was a good time to be a Christian. The church was not obliged to pay taxes. You know, the church paid no taxes. That was a tremendous advantage, yeah? And so many people who previously were not Christians decided to become Christians. Yeah? Suddenly, the Christians had a lot of friends. And here is one of the pieces of evidence that tells us something about Christianity in Britain at the time. This is a mosaic. It's very expensive to make. Very expensive to make. This is in a rich person's house. And what can you see there which tells us something about Christianity? Do you see this symbol? It looks like a P and an X. This is a Christian symbol. This is a Christian symbol. You can, if you go to church, the priest has it on his vestments. Yeah, it's a very, very important Christian symbol. And so we can see that this, in the 4th century, 350, this rich person had a Christian symbol on the mosaic in the house. So at this time we can see that Christians were not secret anymore and that they had influence among the rich elites. When they built, from now on, when they built a new villa, the new villas that we see, that we can find, the archaeologists can find, they have not just a dining room and a farm, but also a chapel. Every new villa now has a chapel as well. So complete transformation, and you get an intersection, an integration of the Christian church and the Roman Empire. And this, of course, is the reason why the capital of the Catholic Church today is Rome. Yeah? And in fact, a very, very special situation where the Catholic Church has a little country. The Vatican City is a little independent country, which is a bit strange, really, isn't it? You know, I think I'll found a church and have an independent country. It's very, very special. So Rome and Christianity became very close together. And paganism renewed. Now, at this time, Christianity was the religion of the elites, of the Roman elites. In the villages, the British farmers, they continued with their old gods, the Celtic gods, the pagan gods. They weren't very interested in religion. But this will be the same later on. This is still a time of crisis to some extent. There is a decline of new building in the towns. There are no new theatres. There are no new forums. The aqueducts are not very well repaired. This is how we know there was an economic crisis. And so Roman Britain, about 410, you have here the end of the Roman Empire. So 400 years, it's quite a long time, the end of the Roman Empire, and here are the important towns, some of which were established by the Romans and some of which were renewed by the Romans. London, of course, very important. Canterbury, Dover, Chichester, Bath, Gloucester. These are still important towns today. And these are the towns you go to. These are the towns you go to if you want to see Roman ruins. Especially York. Where's York? There, York. You have important Roman ruins in York. Although, I have to say, we don't have, in Britain, wonderful Roman ruins like you have in Arles, in Colisée à Arles. Extraordinairement bien conservé. We don't have that in Britain. Most of it got destroyed. So 410. What happened in 410? Well, the crisis in Rome continued, and the different tribes in Germany attacked Roman territory, and big sections of the Roman Empire fell to the German tribes. Of course, it's not German at this time, but the German speaking tribes. And so the capital in Rome, they called for help, and they got out their iPhone and they phoned the Roman army in Britain and said, we need help, please come home. And in 410, the Roman army left Britain and to go back to help Rome. Now, it will not be sufficient. The decline of the Roman Empire will continue, but you know that's what they were doing. Now, when I say the Roman army left Britain, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Remember, at this time, this is 400 years later, the Roman army is not Romans. Most of them were born in Britain. Yeah? And some of the Roman army will stay in Britain. They will leave the army and stay in Britain. Many of the Roman soldiers were married to Celtic women. You know how beautiful Celtic women are, so you know it's, of course they married with them, and so very slowly you get this retraction. After 383, there is no more Roman domination in the east and the north. Yeah, that the Romans are moved back. And secondly, the year before 410, in 409, many towns in Britain decide to expel the Roman magistrates, the Roman leaders. So some of the towns use the situation. The Roman Empire is in crisis, and so they can see that the army will probably leave soon. And so they take advantage of this situation. There you have the Roman soldier. You can see that at the time, this is by the 3rd century, they have very sophisticated technology. This is very sophisticated technology because it's not so heavy as a solid metal armor, so you can move more. This is very, 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 very good stuff too, the helmets and stuff. This is, for the time, this is pretty sophisticated. One of the last rulers of Britain then, Roman rulers of Britain, Magnus Maximus. And every now and then we discover more about Roman Britain because we find, archaeologists find, and in 1975 they found an enormous collection of silver which had been buried a long time ago, we don't know why, and the incredible collection at Water Newton. Water Newton, c'est simplement le nom du village. And that's also what they found there. So, you know, some really quite sophisticated stuff. And in 1992, again, they discovered a big collection. So the history of Roman Britain, we have not finished writing it because we're still discovering more information. Thank you very much for listening. Next week, I will be talking about the Anglo-Saxon invasions and the Viking invasions.